Well, our esteemed Chancellor has gotten a bit ahead of himself, but that's okay. See that door over there? Behind that door is a set of stairs that will take us to a temporary observation platform. We want to show you something, then explain what it will be used for. Are you ready? Thomas was more than ready, dying of curiosity. He nodded at the same time Teresa said,
"Definitely."
They walked as a group toward the door McVoy had indicated, the serious Ramirez taking the rear, looking around as if expecting trouble. They passed a long wall with nothing but huge power docks set far enough apart to accommodate something as big as a car.
"What are those for?"
Thomas asked. They were halfway across the big room. McVoy started to answer, but the Chancellor cut her off. "Let's just get through one thing at a time," he said kindly, and shot McVoy a look Thomas couldn't quite make out. "We have a few things in development that we're not quite ready to share." Thomas had too many butterflies in his stomach to give the comment much thought. He figured he'd have plenty of time later, lying in his bed, to contemplate the onslaught of information being dumped on him. He followed Anderson through the exit, and the small group climbed four sets of stairs. Then they all squeezed in together on the landing directly in front of a massively fortified metal door. McVoy tapped in a security code on a screen. There was a great hissing sound, and then, with a heavy, booming clunk, the door popped open. Anderson and McVoy pushed it open all the way, and then stood aside, allowing Thomas and Teresa to go through first. Thomas had been high on anticipation, but couldn't imagine what to expect. And what he saw before him almost made his heart stop from the sheer shock of it. The open door had created a conduit for air escaping the vast, open space before him. He stood frozen, the breeze washing over him as he took it all in. He was standing on a platform facing a cavern so massive his mind could barely conceive of its size. He could tell the space had been gouged from the earth. The ceiling was uncovered, roughly cut rock dotted with enough huge, blinding lights to illuminate the entire space. That was a feat impressive on its own. But even more impressive were the steel girders that ran around the room. Thomas could only imagine they'd been put in place to reinforce the expansive ceiling, and they glittered in the reflected light of the brilliant spotlights overhead. And they were underground. It seemed impossible, yet they were actually underground. The cavern had to be at least a few miles square and as tall as a skyscraper. Building materials, wood and steel and stone, were scattered in piles across the vast floor. Far in the distance, what looked to be a mile, maybe even two, a huge wall was under construction, its skeletal frame almost reaching the ceiling. Thomas suddenly sucked in a breath on reflex, not realizing he'd been holding it. He just didn't understand what lay before him. It was a massive abscess under the ground, so huge it seemed to defy natural law. How could that roof not just cave in? He looked over at Teresa, whose eyes were wide and glistening in awe. "I'm sure you have many, many questions," McVoy said, "and we can answer them one at a time. Things are going to be different for both of you from now on. You're going to know a lot more, and you're going to be very, very busy."
"Busy doing what?" Teresa asked.
Chancellor Anderson chose to answer that one.
"You're going to help us build this place."
Chapter 12 224.10.14 2:34 p.m. A few minutes later, they were sitting in a small conference room around a table with Ms. McVoy, Dr. Page, and Mr. Ramirez, who had yet to say a single word. The Chancellor had excused himself, but not before reiterating how excited he was to bring Thomas and Teresa to the next level. He assured them that Ms. McVoy would take as long as they needed to answer their questions. The thing was, Thomas wasn't sure he could sort out his questions. After the massive scale of the cavern he'd just stood over, the small room felt almost claustrophobic. And now, gathering his thoughts, it seemed like an incredible feat.
"Okay," McVoy said, her hands folded gracefully on the table in front of her.
"As you can imagine, what you just saw is the culmination of several years' worth of developments. I couldn't possibly go over everything in one sitting, but let's do this. Ask me your questions, and let's see where that takes us. How does that sound?"
Thomas and Teresa both nodded.
"Great. Teresa, why don't you go first?"
"What is that place?"
she asked, the first and most obvious question. McVoy nodded as if expecting those exact words.
"What you saw is one of two natural caverns we found in this area that we then expanded significantly to house what we plan to build inside."
"And what's that?" Thomas asked.
"A maze.
Two mazes, actually. Like I said, there are two caverns."
"Why?"
Teresa asked.
"Why in the world are you building two mazes?"
"As a testing ground. As a controlled environment to stimulate a long list of reactions, both physical and emotional, from our test subjects. We couldn't risk these locations being in the open air, and not just because of the obvious reasons like the decimated landscape and the potential for crank invasions. The world is a dangerous, dangerous place at the moment. But just as importantly, we need a closed testing area so we can effectively control the stimuli."
Thomas heard all this but found it hard to believe, or maybe just too much to process at once.
"Thomas," McVoy said, "do you want to ask the next question?"
"I..."
He searched for words.
"It's just so crazy.
A maze? Two mazes? What are you going to test inside them?"
"Who are you going to test?"
"It's complicated, like I said. But basically, we need a large-scale environment that we can control with no outside influence. Our doctors and psychs think this is a perfect environment to get what we need."
She leaned back and sighed.
"But I'm rambling. The simple answer is this. We'll be continuing to do what we've already begun. We'll be testing immunes, studying their brain function and biology, figuring out how they can live with the flare virus without succumbing to its effects. In short, we're trying to find a cure, Thomas. We're trying to prevent all this unnecessary death that now surrounds us."
"What did you mean about us helping you to build the place?"
Teresa asked.
"Exactly that," McVoy replied with a genuine smile. "We've decided to use you and Thomas, as well as two other children your age, to assist us. Perhaps others. But the four of you are just so beyond what we'd expected from people so young. We're going to utilize that. As I've said before, we're pragmatic people with limited resources. We don't plan to waste your talents. The planning, design, execution of these mazes, it's all going to be tricky."
Thomas's shortage of words continued. He just sat there, stunned. Teresa was quiet as well, maybe feeling the same.
"You do want to help us, don't you?" McVoy asked.
Dr. Page, who had been quiet throughout the afternoon, chimed in here.
"It's an honor and a fantastic opportunity, you guys. I know things are dire in the world right now, but this project could even be fun for you. A challenge. We have a lot of faith in you both, and in the others as well. Aris and Rachel are their names."
After a long silence, McVoy said,
"Well, what do you think?"
Thomas knew they had no choice in the matter, and that it might be a lot of hard work. But the whole idea was exciting, and something new to take up his days.
"Of course," he said, barely able to contain his happiness.
"Yes,"
Teresa added, sounding more serious. McVoy stood up, then shook both Thomas's and Teresa's hands.
"This will be a fun project. You're becoming more a part of Wicked every day."
She said it as if it were the biggest compliment she could give. As they left the conference room and headed back to their rooms, winding through the hallways, stairs, and elevators of the complex, McVoy's parting words echoed through Thomas's mind.
A part of Wicked.
He wasn't sure how he felt about that. Dr. Page told Thomas that he had the rest of the day off to rest, relax, and think about things. He lay on his bed and stared at the ceiling. What he really wanted to do, though, was hang out with Teresa, to talk through it all. His mind spun with the life-changing things he'd heard and seen that day, and he needed Teresa's help to process it all. He looked at his door. It was closed, as always. And for as long as he could remember, it automatically locked upon closing. But he couldn't remember the last time he'd tried it. For months, maybe even a year or two, he'd just always assumed it was locked and didn't bother. Well, now he had a reason to give it a shot. He rolled out of bed and went to the door. Slowly, he reached out, as if it might electrocute him upon touch. He grabbed the handle and turned. The door popped open. Thomas pushed it closed and ran back to his bed, his heart thumping in his ears. He looked around, wondered about the many, many ways they kept tabs on him. Cameras, microphones, sensors, who knew what else? Some were in plain sight, some he couldn't see at all. The fear he suddenly felt wasn't rational. All he'd done was open the door a crack and then close it. Wicked had treated him well for the most part. He hadn't even seen Randall in a long time. Why the sudden chill icing his bones? They watched his every move. He was sure of it. Maybe that was why they'd stopped locking the doors. For all he knew, they wanted him to leave, to observe him, to see what happened. Or it was possible that his obedience in staying put all these years was what had ensured his rise to the top, along with Teresa and those other two kids. Could that be it? It took a while, but his heart finally calmed, and the sweat that had dampened his face and arms evaporated. He stared at the door, pretending, even to himself, that what would happen next was actually up for debate. It wasn't, and he knew it. Something would have to strike him dead to prevent him from exploring. But he had to be smart about it. He would wait until nighttime. The fear turned to pure anticipation. The hours dragged. He desperately wanted to sleep so that he'd be rested for his planned excursion. But it took forever to finally doze off, and then dinner came and ruined it. He ate, rested, finally fell asleep again. He came awake with a start to a darkened room. Worried he'd wasted the entire night, he quickly checked the time, just a few minutes past midnight. He took a quick shower to wash away the grogginess, got dressed, then found himself standing in front of his door again, hesitant, full of doubts. He could ruin everything by wandering the hallways, ruin the chance to work on Wicked's crazy, insane project to build giant mazes underground. Ruin his chance to be with Teresa and others. He sighed, angry at the dent in his enthusiasm. Maybe there was a time mechanism, and the door would be locked. Oh well. They weren't going to punish him for opening a stupid door, or even for venturing into the hallway. He could always take a peek and then come back if it felt wrong. Something clicked, and then the door swung several inches toward him. At first, he didn't understand what had happened. He actually looked down at his hands to see if they'd acted on their own and turned the handle. But they were at his sides, palms sweaty. No, someone had opened the door from the other side. He leaned his head around the edge of the frame, and his heart leapt when he saw a complete stranger staring back at him. A boy about his age. No, not a stranger. The kid just looked different because his blonde hair wasn't covered with a bandage, and he was a little older. "Hey, I'm Newt," the boy whispered. "And I know bloody well who you are, which is why we've decided to finally snag you. Come on, I want to show you something." Chapter 13. 2:24:10:15. 12:58 a.m. Thomas had never had to think so fast in his life. A thousand things went through his mind in the 2 or 3 seconds before he answered Newt. Should he actually go with the boy or slam the door in his face? How could Newt have possibly showed up on the very night that Thomas had discovered his door unlocked and planned to go out on his own? In a place like Wicked, he didn't believe in coincidences. Anything might be a test of some sort. What did this kid want to show him? Was it a trap? Should he invite him into his room and grill him about it? What if... Okay, he finally said, stepping into the hallway. He closed the door behind him, then quickly checked to make sure it didn't lock on him. It didn't. He turned to Newt and asked, "Can we take Teresa with us? She's right next to me." Newt huffed. "This isn't a slumber party." But then he grinned mischievously. "I actually woke her up before coming to you. She's getting dressed. Nab her and let's go. We only have an hour or two." Thomas stepped over to 31K and opened the door, still bewildered. None of the doors were locked? Really? When he stepped inside, Teresa was sitting at her desk, fully dressed. She stood up immediately, looking battle-ready until it registered that her intruder was Thomas.
"What?"
she started, but didn't finish.
"Do you know..."
That didn't get completed either.
"All I know is there's a kid named Newt in the hall," Thomas said to Teresa. "And he says he has something to show us, and I think we should go."
She was by his side and opening the door before he could finish the last sentence.
"Okay, then," he said, as he followed her into the hallway. "Hello again," she said to Newt, who responded with a friendly nod. "We've heard about the two of you," the new boy said. "And those kids, Aris and Rachel."
If it weren't for the kind look on his face, Thomas would have been suspicious of his direct words.
"What's going on?" Thomas asked. "Are you sure this is okay? What if we get caught?"
"Don't be such a worrywart,"
Newt replied.
"If they catch us, what are they going to do? Lock you up in your room?"
Thomas knew exactly what they could do, take away the new opportunity with the mazes. He tried to communicate that to Teresa with his eyes. Maybe this was a terrible idea.
"Good point,"
Teresa said, eyeing Thomas back with a look defying him to challenge her.
"Let's go."
She paused.
"Wait, where are we going again?"
Newt laughed through his nose.
"First things first. Let's meet Albi and Minho."
With those words, Thomas couldn't say no. Sweat trickled down the back of Thomas's neck as Newt led them through various halls, through doors, up and down stairwells. Who needed a maze when their very complex served as one? Thomas expected Dr. Levitt or someone worse to pop out at any minute, catching them in the act. Things had been looking up that day. He really didn't want to ruin it. But then again, he was having the time of his life. It felt good to take a risk, step out on a ledge. They ended up in a dimly lit hall in the basement, where the last door had a sign that said, "Maintenance."
"This is our favorite hiding spot," Newt said, pride in his voice.
He opened the door and ushered them into a large dusty room filled with wooden tables and cleaning equipment, boxes, a million other odds and ends.
"What's up, gents?"
The greeting came from Minho, the boy Thomas had met in the hallway during the crazy day of the implants. He seemed a lot happier now than he had then, screaming and yelling like the world had come to an end. Thomas wondered if he even remembered the ordeal.
"Would you stop saying gents?"
another boy said, dark-skinned and older, with the wisest eyes Thomas had ever seen.
"It's not funny, and it's getting on my nerves."
The rebuke didn't faze Minho in the least. He walked up, a huge smile on his face, and hugged Thomas, then Teresa, the last thing either of them had expected. But Thomas had to admit it felt pretty good. Dr. Page might be a nice lady, but he hadn't felt this kind of warmth in years. Maybe not since he'd said goodbye to his mom. Teresa seemed as stunned by the situation as he did, but she also had a small grin on her face. They were having fun.
You two seem cooler than I thought,
Minho said as he stepped back.
I was expecting a couple of greasy-haired, buck-toothed weirdos quoting Shakespeare and writing out math problems on your hands. You actually look half-normal.
Thanks? Thomas said it as a question. The other boy stepped forward and pushed Minho out of the way.
I'm Albie, he said. Good to meet you guys. Minho actually for once has a good point. With all the rumors about you highfalutin folks, we didn't know what to expect. And that's why we brought you here today, to check you out. It's nice to see you're not too bad, by the looks of it.
It was Teresa's turn to say thanks with a question mark. That made everyone laugh and broke the ice a bit.
So,
Thomas said, not sure where to begin.
How long have you guys been sneaking out like this? It's obviously not the first time.
Nope, Albie replied.
It gets so boring following all their rules, doing everything they tell us to. And yeah, they might know what we're doing. We're not idiots. But hey, until they actually come out and tell us to stop, we ain't stopping.
He turned to Minho and Newt.
Am I right, guys?
Minho whooped a cheer and Newt gave a bored thumbs up.
What are all these rumors about us that you guys keep bringing up?
Teresa asked.
And why are we isolated from you? It seems like you three have known each other for years. Thomas and I just met.
She looked at him, and something in her eyes said she'd almost mentioned the mazes, but caught herself at the last second. That the mazes should be their secret for now. Newt, sitting on a stool by the wall, answered her questions.
Honestly, we don't know what's different about you and those other two. The rest of us have been sharing a cafeteria, going to the same classes and all that for over a year. Way I see it, you're either way smarter or way dumber than us.
Way smarter, obviously,
Teresa said. Her sassy reply threw everyone off kilter for a beat, but then Albie clapped and laughed, and the ice broke just a little more.
Man, I like you guys, he said.
Look, Minho said, as much as I'd like to say we're just being nice inviting you down here, I'm guessing you know we have a reason.
Of course,
Teresa quickly answered. Minho nodded, an appraising look in his eyes.
Good, good. We have ideas, plans. Nothing solid, nothing too crazy, but information is king, and we feel like we're in the dark not knowing you two. Though it'll be a while before there's complete trust.
Fair enough?
Fair enough,
Thomas replied.
We'll tell you what we know if you tell us what you know.
Minho smiled.
Nice. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. There'll be plenty of other chances to talk. First, we want to just get to know you. Maybe show you around a bit. Have some fun. The serious stuff can come in a few weeks or so, when we know you better. Sound good?
Thomas and Teresa looked at each other and shrugged. They both turned back and said yes. Newt hopped off his stool and went to the door.
Let's get out of here before we get cabin fever, he said. I know a good place to start their tour.
Let's go show them Group B.
Chapter 14 2:24:10:15 2:03 a.m. Thomas had never heard the words Group B before, but they definitely piqued his interest. He also noticed a shadow cross over Newt's face when he said it, and a look of discomfort pass over his friends Albie and Minho. Something was weird about it, but that only intrigued Thomas even more. Newt led their little group of five down the basement hallway until they came to a small, unmarked door that only came up to Thomas's waist. It had a latch and padlock, but the lock had been broken long ago, its surface covered in orange rust. This area of Wicked was obviously off the beaten path. Newt bent down and opened the little door, then crawled through. Thomas gave Albie a questioning look, and Albie leaned in to whisper something in his ear.
This is sort of like a ritual for us.
Teresa had come close so that she could hear too.
Newt thinks up reasons to make it happen. See, they have his little sister over there, and when he says he wants to go see her, well, we learned months ago that you better just go along with it or there'll be hell to pay. You got me? Family, man. It's something most of us don't have anymore. Come on.
The trip was a dusty one, involving ladders and grimy passages, barely wider than Thomas's hips. Minho said something about it being a secret escape route from years ago. No one really knew what the original purpose of the building had been before Wicked took over. They finally reached their destination, a loft of sorts, dotted with dirty windows overlooking a huge barracks full of bunks. And those bunks were full of sleeping kids. Thomas strained his eyes looking up and down the rows. As far as he could tell, based on hair length and what he could see of the faces illuminated by the scant light, there wasn't a single boy in the entire room. Thomas didn't know what to think. It was such a contrast to the private rooms in which he and Teresa slept.
"They call us Group A," Albie explained. "And this is Group B. We're all boys, they're all girls. How Eris and Teresa here fit into all that, I don't get. I mean, I guess it makes sense to separate us. Who knows?"
"So you guys live in a place like this?" Teresa asked.
Minho answered,
"Yep. I think I could handle transferring to Group B, though. Someone remind me to put in a request."
"Why are we..."
Thomas trailed off. The question was obvious, and he suddenly had the absurd feeling that it had come across as bragging if he asked it.
"Special?" Albie asked. "That's what we hope to find out from you."
"Looks like you know more than us,"
Teresa said, in an absent voice. Her mind was spinning, Thomas could tell. He wished he could take a peek inside her brain, see what churned there. He looked at Newt. The boy stood silent, looking through a window a few feet down from them. Thomas walked over to him.
"What are you looking at?"
Thomas asked, even though he knew. Newt sniffed, and Thomas noticed for the first time that the boy was crying.
"You see her?"
he said, the tip of his index finger touching the glass.
"Far row, third one from the left side."
Thomas saw a girl curled up under a blanket, her arms wrapped around a pillow, dark hair spilling out.
"Yeah. That your sister?"
Newt looked at him in surprise.
"That's right. Her name's Lizzie."
A long pause, during which his head sank until it rested against the window.
"At least it used to be. They may think they have us all brainwashed with our new names, but no way I'll ever forget hers."
"What did they change it to?"
Thomas asked.
"Sonia."
Bitterness filled his voice.
"Can you believe that? They renamed her Sonia."
He coughed. Or sobbed. Something. His eyes glistened in the gloom.
"And Wicked so mean about it. They won't let me see her. And I've had to pretend that I've forgotten it all or they... punish me."
Thomas was stunned. For the first time since the man named Randall had hurt him, he felt a sudden and shocking anger toward the people behind it all. Toward Wicked. Here stood a boy, a few dozen feet from his own sister, and he couldn't even pretend to know her.
"I did as they asked. I stopped using my real name," Newt continued. "I think I was one of the last holdouts. But hers, I'll never forget. They'll have to kill me first." "I'm sorry,"
Thomas whispered, not sure what to say. His own heart ached thinking of his mom, and just how impossibly hard it would be if she lay in a bed in the barracks below him. How could he not break the glass and go to her?
How?
Newt stood up straight and wiped the tears from his eyes. He appeared to feel no shame whatsoever at letting anyone see him cry.
"That's the way of things, Tommy," he said,
his voice not quite steady.
"The world outside's gone to hell. Why should we expect any different in here? At least I can see her there, sleeping peacefully. How many people in this world would chop off their own arm to be able to say that about someone they love who's dead and gone? It's just the way of things."
He said it as if they'd been friends for years. Teresa came up behind Thomas, leaned in against his back.
"Everything okay?"
she asked.
"Yeah," he said. "Newt was just showing me his sister down there."
"We better not push our luck tonight,"
Albie said.
"Let's go get some shut-eye until the wake-up, then do this all over again tomorrow. What do you say?"
Everyone agreed. As they walked back, a somber silence hung over them, and the journey seemed much longer than before. Thomas had hoped they'd have time to compare what they did and didn't know, but it looked like that was going to have to wait. Goodbyes were said, and ways were parted. Thomas made it back to his room without incident, said goodnight to Teresa, quickly, worried someone might appear in the hallway, then went inside and crashed on the bed without getting undressed. He fell asleep far faster than he would have imagined after all that had happened. Throughout his shortened night, he dreamed of Newt and Sonia, of Newt and Lizzie. The next few days and nights went by in a whirlwind of discovery and exhaustion. Thomas got less than 3 or 4 hours of sleep each night. The morning alarm was like a dagger in his skull, and his head never stopped aching throughout the long, long days of schooling. He waited for Dr. Page or Dr. Levitt or one of his teachers to comment on his nighttime escapades, or worse, an armed wicked guard to whisk him away to a holding cell. But no one acted like anything was out of the ordinary. On their second night of exploration, they discovered a huge laboratory with foul-smelling vats of steaming liquid, at least 2 dozen of them. Even in the deepest part of the night, workers in full hazard suits worked among the odd containers, doing all kinds of tests. A few times, Thomas and the others caught sight of what looked like large fish or tentacles moving beneath the steam, breaking the surface of whatever revolting liquid they swam in. The whole thing baffled even Newt, who said he'd been watching the place for months. They searched the administrative offices on the third night, even catching a man and woman lingering behind after work hours for some lovey-dovey private time. Albie barely stopped Minho in time from jumping out and scaring the poor couple to death. Thomas almost wished he'd let it happen. The fourth and fifth nights were filled with new adventures, more labs, the cafeterias, a giant sports facility that Thomas had never even heard about. They found a hospital room where complicated, mask-like devices hung over each bed, tubes and wires branching out like the legs of a monstrous spider, studded with all kinds of monitoring equipment. Thomas desperately wanted to stay longer and figure out what the things were for, but Albie got them out of there quick. It was the first time Thomas had really seen him flustered, beads of sweat covering his forehead. Something had struck a nerve. It was fun, exciting, terrifying, invigorating. In all the years since Wicket had taken Thomas, he'd never felt so alive. He could feel the bonds of trust growing between them, although he still had no idea where that trust was leading. It was as if the original purpose of their summons had been lost in a burgeoning friendship. Albie, Minho, Newt, Teresa. Thomas had friends. Chapter 15 2:24:10:20 12:15 a.m. Newt had been promising them that he was saving something special, and he did that annoying zipped lip sign every time Thomas or Teresa asked him what. Pinched fingers swept across his tightly closed mouth. The little light in his eyes showed he enjoyed every second of their torture. Regardless of where they were headed on any given night, they always assembled in the basement maintenance room. The dusty old room had become something of a sanctuary for their group. After their third escapade, Newt stopped coming to escort Thomas and Teresa there. They knew their own way, and the exhilaration of sneaking through the dark halls of Wicked only became more enjoyable every time Thomas did it. He lightly tapped on Teresa's door, and she opened it immediately. She poked her head out cautiously and looked up and down the hallway to make sure the coast was clear.
"Okay,"
she said the fourth night as she joined him and closed her door. She couldn't hide the smile blooming on her face.
"What do you think it is tonight?"
They started making their way. Thomas did Newt's zipped lip gesture, and that got him a sharp poke in the ribs.
"Ow,"
he said dryly, and they picked up the pace. Minho and Albie were wrestling when they walked into the maintenance room. For a second, Thomas thought it was a genuine fight, but then Albie let out a whooping laugh when he pulled a maneuver that flipped Minho onto his back with a grunt.
"Not this time, sucker!"
Albie yelled. He pressed his forearm into Minho's chest, and Newt slapped the floor three times. Albie jumped up, arms raised in a victory dance. Minho scrambled to his feet as well, dusting himself off. He let loose a few words Thomas used to hear his dad say, then added a very insincere,
"Good job!"
Albie seemed to take it all as a compliment. It meant he'd won.
"All right, then,"
Newt said, stretching his arms over his head and letting out a yawn.
"Let's get on with it, shall we?"
"What's the big surprise tonight?" Thomas asked. "Where are we going?"
Newt looked up at the ceiling.
"Well, we've pretty much been from one end of this place to the other."
It was hard for Thomas not to look over at Teresa. The truth was, Newt and his friends had no idea what was hidden right under their feet. Trust or no trust, though, there was no way Thomas and Teresa could share the information about the maze cavern. He was just shocked that with all their exploring, the others hadn't already discovered it on their own. And there were supposed to be two mazes. How had Newt and his friends not stumbled upon either one of them?
"Tommy!"
Thomas realized Newt was staring straight at him, eyebrows raised.
"Sorry,"
he said, embarrassed.
"Wandered off there for a second. What did you say?"
Newt shook his head in admonishment.
"Try to keep up, Tommy. Are you ready to see the great outdoors?"
They climbed up a ladder hidden behind a cinder block wall, its original purpose mysterious to Thomas. The building had been built way before any organization named Wicked came into being, and the ladder had a sinister feel to it, as if it had been put there without the knowledge of the original planners or owners, put there to accomplish devious deeds. Thomas choked on dust as they climbed rung by rung, up and up and up. Somehow he'd gotten stuck going last, so he had four people above him kicking loose dirt and gravel and anything else that had collected over the years. A couple of nails even dropped down, one of them almost piercing his right eyeball.
"Could you guys be a little more careful up there?"
he whisper-shouted at the group more than once. The only response was a giggle, and he was pretty sure Minho was the guilty one. Finally, after climbing what had to be 10 floors, they reached a steel landing that was barely big enough to hold the five of them. A heavy metal door, curved and rusted, sat like an ugly tooth in the cement wall to their left. The only thing on the door that didn't look 100 years old was a handle, rubbed shiny silver from usage.
"How many times have you guys done this?" Teresa asked.
"A dozen?"
Albie replied.
"Maybe 15? I don't know. You have no idea how nice it is to get some fresh air, though. You're about to see for yourself. Oh, man, and the sound of the ocean in the distance. Can't beat it."
"I thought the outside world was a wasteland," Thomas said, butterflies swarming more than ever in his gut.
"Radiation and heat and all that? Little things called sun flares?"
"Not to mention cranks,"
Teresa added.
"How do you know there aren't cranks out there?" "Hey, people!"
Minho said, holding a hand up as if to say slow down.
"You think we're morons? Would we have gone out there 15 times if we'd lost a finger to a crank every time or had our privates zapped by radiation? Come on now!"
Newt waggled his fingers in front of Thomas's face.
"Still got 'em all, and I'm not too worried about down under just yet."
A laugh exploded out of Thomas's mouth that sent spray everywhere.
"Sorry,"
he said, wiping his lips on his sleeve. Albie took over the conversation with a little more sense of reason.
"Things are starting to get better out there. Plus, we're way up north, which wasn't hit as badly. A couple of times we've seen snow in the trees."
"Snow?"
Teresa repeated, sounding as shocked as if he'd said aliens.
"Are you serious?"
"Yep." "Enough chit-chat,"
Newt said.
"Minho, open her up."
"Yes, sir,"
Minho barked. He grabbed the handle and pushed it down with a grunt of effort. There was a loud metallic clunk. Then the door opened on squealing hinges, swinging outward. A stiff breeze blew up the ladder chute as pressurized air escaped the complex, as if rushing to freedom. It ruffled Thomas's clothes as it crossed over him, giving him a slight chill, and the anticipation of what awaited them spiked so hard that he could barely contain himself. Minho went out first, then Albie. Newt gestured for Teresa to go next, and she did so, but not before throwing one last glance at Thomas. Her eyes said a million things, but he couldn't decipher any of them.
"You're next, Tommy," Newt said. "Try not banging your head, all right?"
Thomas ducked through the small opening and stepped onto a wide platform of concrete, the air outside crisp and cool. Every memory of the time before Wicked, when he was allowed to go outside, came rushing back to him, paired with warmth and heat and sweat. It was odd, but fantastic, to feel such a refreshing bite of fresh air, just as Albie had predicted, and to hear the ocean waves crashing on rocky cliffs in the distance.
"What you think?" Minho asked.
Thomas looked around, though he couldn't see much in the darkness. Lights shone down from somewhere above, obscuring his vision even more. All he could make out was the platform, a railing around its edge, and a sea of blackness beyond. The sky showed the faintest pinpricks of stars.
"Can't see a whole lot,"
Thomas answered after a moment of silence.
"But man, it feels great!" "Told you,"
Albie said. Thomas could hear the smile in his voice.
"There's a drain pipe over here," Newt said,
leaning over the railing at the corner of the platform.
"Has notches in it, see? Makes it easy to climb down, but it's a bit of an effort coming back up. A little sweat'll be good for you, though." "Let's show them the woods," Minho said. "Maybe we'll get lucky and see a deer, and maybe it'll let us pet it."
Thomas had the feeling he'd never be sure whether Minho was joking or not. He used the exact same tone, his words tinged with amusement, no matter what came out of his mouth. Albie scrambled over the railing and started his descent. Newt had Thomas go second this time. His fingers ached as he gripped the notches in the drainpipe. Luckily, the trip was nowhere near as long as the climb up the ladder inside. When Thomas's feet finally landed on the soft earth, it felt as if he'd stepped onto an alien planet. He stood next to Albie as they waited for the others to join them. There was no snow, but a cool bite to the air hinted it might not be too far away.
"What's out there?"
Thomas asked, gesturing to the wide open space that ended in the dark wall of the forest.
"Can we really just walk away? Why would we even come back?" "Trust me,"
Albie responded.
"We've thought about it. We've talked about hoarding a bunch of food and making a run for it. But the odds, man. Who knows how long we'd last. But even more than that, we've got it pretty good on the inside. We're fed, it's warm, no cranks. Still, it's something we think about."
There seemed to be more on his mind that he chose not to share. Teresa was the last one to jump the few feet off the bottom of the drainpipe. Thomas saw Albie open his mouth to say something, but before he got a word out, blazing lights ignited from all directions, along with a series of clunks, as if giant switches were being thrown. Thomas shielded his eyes, spun in a circle, but he couldn't see a thing, blinded by light. Squinting, he could gradually make out three dark figures piercing the brightness. They approached, hunched over some sort of handheld weapon, and as they got closer, Thomas could see they wore uniforms and helmets. A fourth man appeared behind them, and as he neared, Thomas's insides felt like they were melting into something toxic. It was a man Thomas hadn't seen since his naming day.
Randall.
And it appeared he'd graduated from the Green Scrubs.
"You kids really shouldn't be out here," he said.
He sounded almost sad.
"But I don't think you need me to tell you that. You're smart enough to have figured it out on your own. It seems we need to teach you a lesson about the dangers of the outside world. Make you appreciate what Wicked does for you just a teeny bit more."
His speech had an odd cadence, as if he were reciting something he'd memorized and practiced beforehand. He pointed at Newt.
That one's not immune. Get him back to his room and call a doctor in to test him. Pronto!
As one of the guards moved toward Newt, Randall sighed loudly, then waved a hand toward Thomas and the others.
Take the rest of them to the crank pits.
Chapter 16 224.10.20 2:09 a.m. Thomas didn't know when it had started, but he and Teresa were holding hands. They were standing together, sharing their sudden fear of what was about to happen, worrying about their punishment. One of the guards, a woman, stepped up to them.
"Don't be scared," she whispered. "Randall just wants to teach you a quick lesson about the dangers of being out here. It's for your own good, and you'll be safe. Just do as we say, and it'll be over soon. Deal?"
Thomas nodded. The words crank and pits were still reverberating through his mind. How many times in his life had he heard about cranks, people with the flair who were well past the gone, who were nothing more than animals consumed by bloodlust?
What had Randall meant? Where were they being taken? "Come on now," the female guard said to him, reaching out and gently taking his arm. "If you cooperate, you'll be back in your room safe and sound before you know it, with enough time for a quick nap before the wake-up."
Teresa was squeezing his hand so hard it hurt, but he nodded and then followed the guard when she started walking away from the drainpipe, leading them along a path that followed the footprint of the wicked complex. Another guard walked with Albi and Minho, who both looked just as stunned as Thomas felt. The third guard stayed at the building, Newt by his side, looking at the ground, his face unreadable. Thomas looked for Randall, but the man was on the phone, several yards from his friend. Thomas lost sight of them as they turned a corner, but he couldn't shake what Randall had said about Newt, that he wasn't immune. It didn't hit Thomas until that moment just how enormous the implications of that were. And then, why was Newt here if he wasn't a muni? Teresa's voice tore him from his thoughts.
"Can't you tell us where we're going?" she asked. "What are the crank pits?"
The little group continued walking, following the path. The lady didn't answer, nor did the guard escorting Albi and Minho just a few steps behind. The sounds of the ocean and the smell of salt and pine filled the silence.
"Answer her," Thomas said. "Please. We didn't do anything wrong. We were just exploring. What are we, prisoners?"
This also was met with silence.
"Say something,"
Teresa yelled. Their guard whirled to face them.
"You think I like this?" she snapped.
Then she looked around like someone caught stealing. She lowered her voice.
"I'm sorry. Really. Just do as you're told. It makes things a lot easier. All we're going to do is help you to realize why it's better to stay inside."
After that ominous statement, she turned and continued leading them along the exterior of the building. No one said another word. They came to a road. To the right, it wound through some fields, then disappeared into the forest looming in the distance. To the left, it intersected with the wicked complex itself and turned into a steep ramp that descended beneath the building. Without hesitating, the guard stepped onto the asphalt and turned left, toward the darkness of the tunnel 30 feet in front of them. Thomas looked up as he followed her, saw the tall granite walls of the wicked facility, the faint scattering of stars in the dark sky above that. He'd been hoping so badly to see the moon. The road dipped down, and soon they were beneath the building, in a wide tunnel with no lights. Someone must have turned them off, because there was no way they'd normally keep this place unlit. He heard a sound that made him pause mid-step. It was haunting. A human sound between a cry and a moan. Maybe not so human. Goosebumps prickled across his skin, and he felt a shudder of horror go through his chest. It was so dark he could barely see the outline of their guard when she stopped and turned to face them. She pulled out a flashlight and flicked it on, shined it in their faces, then to her left. It revealed a rickety iron gate, a chain and padlock wrapped around its bars to keep it closed. Without saying anything, the other guard left Albi and Min-ho and walked over, pulled out a key, then unlocked the padlock. The loud rattle of the chain being unwrapped echoed through the tunnel. The man dropped the chain to the ground and opened the gate.
"In you go," he said. "This is only meant to give you a scare. They won't be able to actually harm you, I promise."
"What's in there?" Thomas asked.
"Cranks,"
the female guard answered in a kind tone, completely incongruous with the word itself.
"Sometimes we need to remind you just how awful this disease is."
"They won't hurt you," the man said again. His voice was solemn. "They'll scare the pants off you, but they won't hurt you." "Come on, guys," Min-ho said, marching past the guard. "Let's see what's inside this hellhole."
Thomas didn't want to. Every nightmare he'd ever had was welling up inside him. Teresa's bravery shook him out of it. She went through the gate, then Albi. Thomas followed. Chapter 17 224.10.20 2:28 a.m. The darkness was the scariest part. Even though the guard continued to shine her light behind them, it seemed the beam was lost in a black fog. They walked, small step by small step, across crunchy gravel, down a narrow path lined on both sides with the iron railings of a fence. The bars rising from the ground were spaced about 5 inches apart. Two long bars ran along the top and bottom. If there was anything on the other side of the fence, Thomas couldn't make it out.
"This is spooky,"
Min-ho spoke quietly, though it seemed loud in the still darkness.
"Albi, hold my hand."
"Dude, chill,"
was Albi's response. Their feet scraped against the gravel, causing an echo that almost sounded like whispers. Thomas felt claustrophobia edging in, the farther they went. It took everything he had not to turn around and run back. They kept on. Soon they came to a brick wall, the fence on both sides leading right up to it. A dead end. This only fanned the flames of Thomas's panic.
"What now?"
he asked, hating how the whine in his voice gave away his fear.
"Go back?"
"Definitely go back,"
Teresa answered.
"Maybe this was just a test to see if we'd do what we were—"
Min-ho shushed her, holding a finger to his lips. He looked down, listening. In the dim light coming from behind them, he looked like a phantom.
"Something's coming," he said.
He pointed at the bars to the left of the brick wall.
"From back there."
Thomas turned to face where Min-ho indicated and stared into the darkness beyond the fence. He strained to hear. And there it was. Although the four of them weren't moving, barely even breathing, the scrape of footsteps echoed throughout the tunnel. Thomas thought he heard it coming from behind as well, and he spun around to look. But now the sound was everywhere, seeming to come from all directions, getting louder.
"Cranks," Albi whispered. "They throw them in a creepy jail under their own building. Nice."
Shapes were coming into view to match the scuffing of footfalls. Bodies.
"I think they must keep them somewhere else, actually," Min-ho said. "Or they would have been pressed against the bars while we walked down here. I think they just released them like wild animals to pay us a visit."
Moans and indecipherable murmurings broke out among the crowd of oncoming cranks, increasing rapidly. Thomas and his friends had definitely been spotted. And then, like a switch had been flipped, the room filled with thunderous sound, deafening. Screams and cries of anguish. Roars. Slapping footsteps as they rushed toward the bars. Thomas shook with a drowning fear as all around them, cranks crashed against the fence, bodies upon bodies pressing against those who'd made it first. Arms reached through the bars, hands clasping and unclasping as they tried in vain to grab Thomas and the others. Thomas stood in the very center of the passageway, Teresa right beside him. Albie and Minho were a few feet away. Albie had his back to the brick wall, jerking his head left to right, trying to take it all in. Minho was in front of him, in a fighting stance, as if that would do any good if the bars gave way to the press of the crowd. Thomas looked at the cranks, all of them so far past the gone, that he felt equal parts terror and pity. The creature's eyes emanated an emptiness like he'd never seen, and scratches and torn flesh covered their faces and arms. Their clothes were filthy, bloody, ripped. Some screamed, some sobbed, tears streaming down their faces. Others spoke harshly and rapidly, the words impossible to make out, all of them reaching, reaching, as if Thomas and the others were their only hope to escape the horrific disease that had ruined their minds. One woman suddenly appeared, having fought her way to the front. Her face relatively clean, she stared straight at Thomas, her lips working as if she was trying to figure out what to say. And then she was speaking, her voice hitching with tremors.
My babies!
Those two words, over and over. She wept the entire time, then abruptly attacked the bars like a rabid gorilla, throwing her body against the fence viciously until she finally fell down. It looked like she'd knocked herself out. Other cranks stepped on the woman as they took her place. Thomas felt a crushing sadness, a black despair that filled his chest.
"I think we've learned our lesson," Albie shouted. "Head back now."
Thomas shook his head. The horror of their surroundings had hypnotized him in a way, frozen him in disbelief. And that was what it was. Even after watching his dad degenerate into an angry shell of a man, even after all the stories he'd heard over the years, nothing could have prepared him for this. He couldn't possibly believe it until seeing it for himself right now.
"Thomas, go!" Minho shouted.
They were lined up next to him, all of them standing in the center of the path, staying well out of the way of the outstretched arms of the cranks. Thomas nodded, not as afraid as he'd been, just sinking ever deeper into that black feeling. Had this happened to his mom? Had she cried for her baby over and over in her madness? His feet felt attached to the gravel under him. He couldn't move.
"Thomas," Teresa whispered into his ear, "it's okay. This is why we're here. We're going to help them find a cure. Save people from this."
Her voice lit a fire in him, made him feel something. He turned, started walking back the way they'd come. He didn't need to look to know that Teresa was right behind him. Her hand was on the small of his back, as if she alone were pushing him forward. Cranks filled the tunnel on both sides, a never-ending mass of them, the iron bars the only thing keeping them from tearing apart their next meal. Thomas looked at the ones on the left, the ones on the right. They were all different, and he tried to focus on one thing that made each an individual. A face, hair color, body type. Because in all other ways, they'd become one. A raving mass of lunacy, completely unaware of their own actions. Thomas looked straight ahead and saw someone standing in his path just a few feet away. He gasped, stopped. Teresa bumped into him from behind. Fear lodged in his throat, choking him. It was a man. He looked nothing like the cranks behind the bars, but he also didn't appear to be well. His blonde hair was dirty and uncombed, his clothes rumpled, his eyes bloodshot. But he had no wounds that Thomas could see, and he stood straight and still, calm. The strangest thing of all, though, was that he held a small chalkboard in the crook of one arm. Without speaking, he pulled it out and used the piece of chalk in his other hand to write on it. Then he held it up for the group to read. The three words seemed to glow in the dim light. "Wicked is good." Chapter 18. 2:24.10.20.